And a high fly ball, center field. He hit it a ton. It's gone. And the 2010 Central Division Championship belongs to the Cincinnati Reds.
Football. Short drop. Lobs one down the sideline for Binns. He's got it! Touchdown! 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 Armand Binns!
See, this is the kind of thing, quite honestly, right now, that makes you want to see the Chicago Cubs team lose.
And it is Bob.
Oh, yeah!
And caught!
Yeah!
AJ Green makes the catch. Woo! On the ricochet. Hail Mary! As a prayer is answered in the end zone by Adriel Jeremiah Green.
Welcome to another episode of Riverfront Radio. Much like Yasiel Puig this week, we're coming to you a little bit late. I don't know if you guys saw some of the stuff on Twitter tonight, or I guess last night as you guys are listening to this, but everyone's making a big deal about Yasiel Puig not showing up on time to the Dodgers press conference today, because I guess he was supposed to have kind of a hey, I'm back type of press conference, and I think he showed up like 90 minutes late or something like that. And so, like, they're just keeping, like, they're like the LA Times was keeping track on Twitter, like, yep, Puig's still not here. And I guess they talked about, too, he was supposed to have a meeting with, I don't know if it was a GM or somebody from the Dodgers organization to get presented with the NLCS rings. And he was late for that. And they asked him about it, because he did show up eventually. They asked him about it in the press conference, like, yeah, like, so, you know, what happened with the ring? Did you meet him? Whatever. And, you know, Puig was like, you know, I told him he gives to me a batting practice or just put it in my locker, you know, whatever. I don't care. But, like, everybody's trying to make a huge deal about, like, Puig showing up late to press conferences. Like, oh, yeah, same old Puig, just, yeah. You know, never on time. But
how dare him disrespect us after we traded him and basically sent him down to the AAA and badmouthed him. And
dare he not change who he is?
Yeah. Right.
What did you expect from this guy?
I didn't see any of that, but I mean,
it's literally within like the past 20-30 minutes.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, he could have just said he got stuck in customs on the way back from Mexico.
There you go.
Was,
yeah, but they showed some pictures too with some of the former Dodgers and kind of talking to their old teammates or whatever on the field. And Puig was the only one that wasn't there. So all the Dodgers fans like, oh, where's Puig at? Is he butthurt or just late or what? Like, so.
God,
yeah, guys, come on.
I hope he hits 3 homers tonight.
I know.
And Kemp, I think, I want to say, do the Dodgers, I'm trying to think what the rotation, I know they got Kershaw tonight, so Kemp's starting, but I want to say they said something about there should be 4 straight games where Kemp is going to be playing because they're going to be facing a lefty. Yeah. And I don't know if that started tonight or if it starts at the end of the Dodgers series. Or when it starts.
They were saying this is the first time that the Reds have faced a lefty this year as a starter, which is kind of surprising that we're already 14 games into the season.
Yeah.
So since we last talked, I think the last podcast, the Reds were sitting at like 1-8. So we had a pretty decent week in comparison to how they started, where they, you know, they swept the Marlins and then split the series down in Mexico with the Cardinals. I was kind of impressed with what I've been seeing from the Reds. Definitely a major improvement from how they started the season.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Go ahead.
Now, Puig's been smoking the ball, and he finally got a home run yesterday.
Yeah.
Which, it was in a losing effort, but it was nice to see him actually get payoff for some of the – he's absolutely crushed some balls, and they've either just been line drives or, you know, they've been right at – or they've been doubles, which I'll take doubles, but he hadn't hit that home run yet, which I'm glad he finally got that monkey off his back and maybe he can loosen up in a little bit. And he is a lot like he's a right-handed Jay Bruce in a lot of ways, where he's got an absolute cannon.
Meaningless home runs.
Yeah. Yeah. But he just absolutely crushes the ball for a week straight and then he goes dormant. And I mean, he is a very similar player to Jay Bruce. He's probably a little more imposing. He looks a little scarier, I think, at the plate just because he's built like an NFL linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce was just kind of a, Adam Dunn that didn't hit puberty yet.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
I still don't think he has chest hair.
Probably not, man. He's crushing the ball in Seattle, though.
Yeah, he is. That was a surprising start for him.
That's true. Everybody's hitting in Seattle. But, yeah, that Jay Bruce, I think at one point he had 7 home runs through the first 10 games or so. I forget the amount. Because they seem like they played
for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, in Seattle, they feel like they've played twice as many games as anybody, even though it's only really 2 more than anyone or whatever it was.
Yeah. Japan games.
Yeah, it just seems like it, though. But, yeah, they another former Red doing well. But Homer pitched well the other night for Kansas City. So just
I saw Billy Hamilton score a run.
Yeah, and then I think he got carted off the field the next day. So I don't know.
Really?
I never did get an update on his injury. But it didn't look good, it sounded like. And in a leg injury to someone like Billy Hamilton is not a good thing for his game because it's not like he's multifaceted.
Yeah,
he can't sit there and rely on his hitting or switch to an infield position or something like that. But
So it seems like a lot of the Reds have started hitting a bit more. And one of the guys that has really stepped it up has been Jesse Winker.
Yeah.
I mean, he started off abysmal. And this past week, he's got his batting average from, I don't know, like 0.1 up to almost 200. I mean, that's still not great for an entire season, but I feel like he's getting there. Yeah. He's got 4 home runs now. So like, and he's spraying the ball everywhere. He's not just hitting it to right.
I think I don't know if all 4, but probably 2 or 3 of those have been opposite field. I know the one we saw in person was opposite field. Yeah. The one he hit the other night was St. Louis was in opposite or. In St. Louis, against St. Louis, was opposite field.
Yep.
But like you said, he's spraying the ball and he's hitting the ball well. And
finally,
he's one of those guys that I feel like should be a lot faster than he is.
Yeah, he's deceptively slow.
Yeah, he just looks like one of those guys that would cruise, like get up and go. But
yeah, he's got thrown out stealing a couple times already this season. He's not a quick dude.
No. And why are you trying? Yeah, someone else got thrown out stealing the other night, and it's like, why are you running? I forget who it was.
I think I saw Suarez get thrown out the other night, maybe Peraza. We have not been good on the base pass so far.
Peraza is one of those guys that he can steal some bases, and he's pretty quick, but
yeah,
it was somebody that I don't remember who it was now. Like, it was just they had no business stealing a base, and I don't remember who it was, but...
Maybe they're taking the same approach that I used to take in MLB The Show, where I get on base. I didn't want to run bases, so I would steal every single opportunity I got, whether I got thrown out or not.
When they switched that, you didn't have to run the bases, even so you can set it up now where you either only run on action pitches.
Yeah.
You only run on when you're the lead runner, because there's nothing worse than getting on base and there's someone in front of you, and you're like, you can't even steal.
Right.
And, so you can get it where you don't have to run in those situations. Or a lot of times I just turn the running off because, you know, old Mackier hits for power. I'm not really a speedster, right. Even an MLB The Show. But
you guys will never believe some of the numbers I put up in MLB 09 The Show. Amazing.
It's impressive, man.
They'll never be touched.
That would be
historic.
I know. I kind of wish that they still had, because back when we all had time to play, you know, serious, like MLB The Show careers, where that's, you know, 5 or 6 hours
into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish that you could import those old players. They didn't start doing that until probably we were done with college or on the very end of college.
Yeah.
And I feel like I would probably be wrapping up a Hall of Fame career if I could have my first MLB The Show guy.
Mm-hmm. I swear. I have like 9 or 10 years invested in one of those dudes.
Yeah.
Just sitting on my PS3 somewhere in a save file.
Well, now they do all kinds of stuff. Like, you have interactions with coaches and other players and media and stuff. It's kind of cool. It sounds a lot like I know they did that with Madden 1 year, and I think they did it with the NHL and the one NBA game where you actually like decided who you were hanging out with and stuff.
Yeah. Can you tweet out like dick pics and stuff?
Yeah, oh yeah. That's the first thing I did when I got drafted. Like, what size ring do you think this thing needs?
That and your gravity bong.
Yeah. Do they have like a mini game where you have to go in and delete old tweets after you do something big before people expose you?
I swear it was a rap lyric.
That was supposed to be a DM.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all, check this out. This is 2438.tif or whatever.
But, oh, shit.
It'd be nice to see some of these Reds guys get hot and put up some MLB The Show numbers here. I mean, L.A. is not really a hitter park, but L.A., the Dodgers have been crushing the ball. Like, they, at one point, they, I think, didn't they have like seven homers in the one game or something like that? And it was, and everyone's like, well, it was kind of funny because they lost two of their better bats in the outfield. And then they start crushing the ball. And meanwhile, Puig and Kemp aren't doing anything in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
They switched, you know, philosophies on ballparks and the opposite of what you would expect happened. But
I'm hoping Kershaw's a little rusty tonight.
Yeah. And they
first
always
start
say,
of the season.
And they and the it's a tired saying, and it's not always true because when guys are regressing in their careers, but nine times out of ten, you can wipe away the first week or two of the season. Everyone always plays to the back of their ball card, and it's like you're gonna get 20 some home runs out of Kemp.
Yep.
You're gonna get 20, might even sniff 30. I don't feel so hot about my Puig almost getting 40 home runs prediction now, but you're gonna get, you know, mid-20s, even sniff 30 home runs out of Puig. You're going to get Suarez crushing the ball. Votto is finally hitting the ball hard again. And on opening day when Votto doubled, I'm like, here it is. Joey's not going to have one of those slow starts and he's going to get going. And because he's done that a couple years where he kills himself in the first month of the season.
Yeah.
And then he puts up like MVP numbers the second half of the season, but it's too late.
Yep.
So I don't know. Tonight will be fun. Like you said, Dan, at Clayton Kershaw, it's his first start back. Hopefully he gets rusty. Hopefully it's not one of those deals where all of a sudden everyone's freaking out. Like, Kershaw's back. He's going to win the Cy Young. He's, let's let him figure it out against somebody else.
Yeah.
Let's get to him early.
Another thing, not directly related to the game, but back to Puig and his press conference. One thing I found interesting that kind of goes against the bad teammate, bad attitude narrative that everyone likes to throw out there. Someone was asking about Joey Votto, and he was kind of talking about his relationship with Joey already. And like you could tell, like he genuinely felt like a connection with Joey. He was talking about how, like, Joey's always, you know, reaching out to him, talking to him, texting him every day. He said he reached out like down in the Mexico series and was kind of talking to him. And I think his quote was something like, you know, he makes me want to be a better person in baseball and outside of baseball. And like, it seemed genuine. So hopefully a guy like Joey can really have a positive effect on Puig and kind of not necessarily stop his antics. I think that's kind of what you like about Puig, is he has fun with it, but maybe keep him from going a little bit too far and makes him, I guess, take away some of the bad attitude when he gets, when things aren't going so well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I liked hearing the way he was talking about Joey, and I don't know. I'm confident that we're not going to have the same experience that the Dodgers fans had with him, but, you know, who knows? It's early.
I agree. And I think you saw that a lot too. Granted, the situation was probably because Puig had been struggling. Like, I think he sticks up for his teammate regardless, but the fact that he was struggling when, you know, Dietrich got thrown at, I think that just like made it even more frustrating, and it boiled over when he lost his mind. I think if he was, you know, hitting 300 with four home runs already, I don't think he necessarily tries to kill somebody.
Yeah.
But that was something you saw in the, like, you could tell that, granted, he escaped his grasp multiple times and wasn't listening to him to calm down, but the fact that, you know, Joey and he like locked up basically.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, it looked like a situation where Joey had already, it wasn't like that was the first time they had interacted, which
hey buddy
I see
you're getting that fight there.
I see you really teed off there, bud. And that was a lot of people like, oh, Joey's going to love Puig. But I think Joey feeds off of someone like Puig, and Puig learns a lot from someone like Joey. Like you said, Whitty, like Puig can look at Joey as an example of, you know, how to handle yourself on a day-to-day basis. But Joey's not going to be the type of guy that says, Puig, you're not supposed to talk anymore. You're not allowed to show emotion. You have to stomp on paper airplanes when they fly on the field. Like, he's not going to say that, like, I don't know. Like, I think people just automatically jump to, oh, and two people aren't the exact same, they're going to clash.
Yeah.
Or like when they're that polar opposite, they're going to clash. Like that, they feed off each other. And I think Brandon Phillips seemed like a very difficult person to be with because he's probably always at energy level, you know, 100, 100, 100.
And he's really me, which I don't feel like Puig definitely is.
I think Puig is. Now, I think, yeah, I agree with that, Dan. It's, that was something that pissed me off the day the trade happened when people are like, oh, buckle up, Joey, you're going to love this.
Yeah.
It's like, he coexisted with Brandon, and Brandon Phillips seemed like probably the most difficult person in the world to deal with on a day-to-day basis because he might have been passionate about the game, but at the end of the day, he didn't give two shits about where the Reds were in the standings if it meant he was still getting his Debbies on deck and getting the attention. And I love Brandon Phillips. I always liked Brandon Phillips. I think he was a great player, and he was a fun Red.
He's a hot dog.
Shit your feet and throw the ball. but Scott Rolen was, it's funny because we didn't get him in a trade. Joey's been here his whole career, but I feel like Joey's taking on that Scott Rolen role. We saw with that young team that went on a run to lose in the first round of the playoffs, but the team that went on a run to win the division. And some people were even saying Kemp is kind of filling that role too, because we talked about it last week where Kemp did the, I don't work here type of deal, or I only work here type of deal, or whatever he said.
I don't know. I just work here.
Yeah. There you go. See, I don't even know the quote anymore. But a lot, I guess, behind the scenes, he's been helping with Winker and of the other outfielders too. So the fact that Kemp is just showing up, punching his time card and leaving, like that's not happening either. So, but that happens anytime someone comes from a big city to a small market. You see it with the Jackets. You see it with the Reds. Not so much with the Bengals because they don't trade in the NFL. At least the Bengals don't. It's more of a free agency, and they get a bunch of second-tier guys that, or guys on the end of their career. So it's not really the same thing. They don't have that narrative to play in the NFL. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me being sick of being looked down upon and being in a small market compared to some. But happened with Matt Harvey.
Yep.
People are like, enjoy Cincinnati, but the bars close at 2, and you know, no nightlife. Like, those are people that haven't been to Cincinnati in 15 years. Like, Matt Harvey had the same outlet to do everything he did in New York. He just didn't have the media to.
We have a giant carousel.
You can bang on it if you want.
It's fun,
but it has happened apparently. Not by any of us, right? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Not for any of us. I don't know. Whitty's being quiet over there.
Say next time we're all down at the ballpark together.
That's weird. You said you went to the game alone, Whit. I'm not sure that counts.
It's a listen.
So besides the Reds heading out to LA, another Cincinnati name's heading out there. Mick Cronin is going to be the new head coach of the UCLA Bruins basketball team. And I think that it kind of brings along some mixed emotions from me. You know, Mick had a great run in Cincinnati with 9 years straight. And I'm not exactly upset that he's leaving, because I feel like the program could do more and should be more than what it is.
Sure.
But he had a great run. He did a lot of good things for the program. He kind of rebuilt it from scratch.
Yeah.
And I think that he definitely left it in a better place than, you know, where the program was when he took it over. So I'm very grateful for Mick. And I wish him luck in UCLA. I don't know that he'll necessarily do great out there. I think it's going to be, I mean, it's always a tough task, but he's definitely going to be getting better recruits, or should be getting better recruits, better talent in Los Angeles. Yeah. It's just a question of what he can do with it.
University of Cincinnati, Los Angeles.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the University of Indiana, Purdue, something, Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And Yasiel Puig, first at bat back in Dodger Stadium, home run to center field. You heard it here first, You heard it here first.
My cast is far behind you.
I'm sorry.
Because, I haven't seen that come through yet. I did see one of the one of the stats leading up to the game was that, I know we already moved on from Reds talk, but it said that Kurt Casale is the first catcher to lead
since
off
1900
since 1900. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah,
and he it's the first time he's batted leadoff since high school, I think they said.
That's funny. Which, but yeah, if he's batting almost 400 right now, you might as well put him in while he's hot.
Yep.
Oh, hey, Puig just hit a home run. But yeah, no back way. To the UC Bearcats and Mick Kern. And UC hired NKU's head coach over the weekend, John Brannan.
Yeah, and so the first I heard that, you know, named John Brannan, UC basketball coach. My first Bobby's thought was, brother. Yeah, I didn't know. Maybe some kind of connection to Bobby Brannan, but
yeah,
it seems like there's no connection at all between the two of them. Not that I can tell, anyway.
No.
I feel bad for NKU, and I know that can seem condescending, but I know what it feels like to have your coach just completely ripped away after they've built something.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, but like, their program is 4 years old and is Division One. They've been around forever, but they're Division One for I think this is their fourth year, right?
Yep.
Or something like that. Is a Division One school. They've had two NCAA tournament appearances. But he's a local guy. He didn't flat out say he was a UC fan growing up. He's from Northern Kentucky, so it would make sense if he was just a UK fan. But he probably knew
an NKU fan.
That's right. Maybe he liked them in the old NAIA days or whatever they were. but he went to Newport Catholic, which is where his star player went, Drew McDonald. And then he played at Morehead State, and then he went to Marshall, I think, is where he finished college. Yeah,
he's got ties all over the
area. So, and that helps with recruiting. That helps with assistance. That helps with – he's got pro ball experience. Granted, it was over in somewhere. It wasn't like one of the main Euro leagues, but it was somewhere over there.
Yeah.
But the key here, and this is why I think this is a good move, and it's a safe move, yes, but I think it's a good move in the sense that we improved our head coaching position by about a foot. So I think that's what we really need to look at here. Is he's 6'7", and Mick Cronin, we never really knew how tall Mick Cronin was. He's one of those guys that I could see being 5'6". I could see him being 5'10". I've never stood next to him, so I don't know. And it's hard to judge when he's around a bunch of basketball players. But yeah, I think that, I mean, just on respect alone, I feel like the refs should take him more seriously. I think that, you know, recruits will take him more seriously when you see a 6'7" guy. You know, someone like Mick Cronin walks in and they need a stool to get on the couch. I don't know that you really want to sign with that guy. So... I don't know.
So, but now, one thing that I have heard, unfortunately, and this was actually direct from Kenyon tweeting last night.
Yeah.
He's pretty upset that they only interviewed two people for the position, and neither of them was a former like player or had any real ties with UC. And Kenyon said it's not even about Nick Van Exel, because he was rumored to be, you know, a front runner since he took over. You know, he's been in the Grizzlies coaching organization for a while. He said it's not even about Nick Van Exel. It's that you didn't consult any of the former players, or you know, talk to us about where we see the program heading. Mm-hmm. He's very unhappy with the program right now, and you need big former players like that backing you. So I see some trouble for UC to like pack in fifth third. I don't know,
especially. Yeah, well, big former players that have a kid that is a recruit, like a big recruit, like
who's going to be a monster.
Yeah. And I know you don't want to necessarily, college is different than pros in the sense that you can't really hire based on your current roster or who you think you can get as a recruit. But I guarantee you, if they got Nick Van Exel, or there was a rumor of Andy Kennedy with Nick Van Exel as an assistant at one point, that would have been very weird. But if that happened, you could almost guarantee that. No, I mean, I'd almost feel like, is his name Kenyon Martin Jr.?
Yeah.
Yep.
Because I know he's got Kenyon Martin Jr., but I didn't know if this was the kid that was, if he was the one that was a basketball player.
I think he calls him KJ.
KJ. I could see him ending up at UCLA now. Like that, or like, how awesome would it be if he went to West Virginia and played for Hugs?
Yeah.
Like that would be awesome too.
Yeah.
If you could make Hugs riding out into the sunset with another Kenyon Martin. Hopefully this one doesn't break his leg in the conference tournament.
Jesus.
But
but I saw, so I was looking at some of those specific tweets that Kenny was throwing out there, and he said exactly what you said, because I think people were kind of responding to his negativity, and he's like, you know, if you think UC doesn't need the support of former players, I mean, you know, go check out a game. So he's kind of making the same point as you did, and he says specifically he gives the university an F+ for their hiring process.
Which is, I mean, it's not a shock that he doesn't know how the grading scale actually works. If you go by any of the rumors of his academic career before he got to UC.
But someone else tagged him, DeMar Johnson, Corey Blount, and James White in a tweet and just said, you know, what do you guys think of the John Brannon hire? And James White responded to it and just said, who is that? So, yeah, it doesn't seem like he's a popular choice for the former players, but
yeah.
I don't know. I think results will turn that all around.
So
if he come in there and put his stamp on the program, then people kind of forget about all that.
The other thing I worried about with this hire would be there's a good portion of NKU. Like, there's a very small percentage of people that are truly just, hey, I'm an NKU fan. Like, that's my only school that I root for.
Right.
A lot of people are, I'm a UK fan. I grew up a UK fan. I went to NKU, or my friends went to NKU. I'd like to root for NKU. Same thing with UC and NKU fans and Xavier and NKU fans. I worried about, you know, some of the people that, you know, they're UC fans. They were already kind of still butthurt over the Huggins and now the McCronin stuff. Now they steal NKU's coach. Is it one of those deals where you lose another? Granted, it's a small percentage, but you alienate another section of the fan base on top of the people that are mad you didn't hire a guy with UC ties, on top of the guy, people that are mad that you didn't hire a guy with a, you know, a household name.
I feel like you could also look at it the other way, where, like, my father-in-law is a big NKU fan. Yeah. So I feel like he's going to root for UC more now that there is a guy that stepped up from NKU. You could look at it either way, and sure there's people in on both sides of it.
Exactly, and the people that bail on UC for that reason, any of the reasons really, I mean, they were going to find one way or the other to bail. Like very rarely is it I was a hardcore fan. They made this move, pissed me off, and I'm never coming back. I've been looking for a reason to say I'm a Duke fan. I've been looking for a reason to say that all of a sudden I'm a, you know, Villanova fan. Like,
right.
Like, it just, I don't know. That's the kind of thing that drives me nuts, when everybody's initial reaction of, that's it, I'm done with. And granted, I'm done with the Bengals 16 weeks a year. But but people that are like, this is bullshit. Like, they should have hired Nick Van Exel. Or how did they not hire Coach K? Like, just throw all the money at Coach. Like, nobody literally said that, but like, some people think that UC's operating on an endless supply of money in their athletic department.
Yeah.
Like, they either have to find an up and coming person that they don't have to pay top dollar to, or they need to find someone that this is a destination job that they're willing to, like, kind of what McCronin did, where they were underpaid because they wanted to be here.
Right.
And I think that you would have gotten with Nick Van Exel or Andy Kennedy. I think that's what people were hoping they were getting with Frank Martin, but he just used it as a way to probably get a boost from South Carolina, which, good for him. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm hoping this keeps Cumberland around. I'm hoping this keeps some of the commits around. Be interesting to see how he turns this team into an offensive juggernaut, because that's his MO.
That's his style of coaching. You know, he's all offense.
And Mick recruited for defense, which, I'll have this argument. I never understood, and maybe people that know a hell of a lot more about basketball than me could explain it, but I feel like you can always teach a scorer to play defense because they're obviously going to be an athletic guy, but it's so hard to teach an athletic guy that can't shoot the ball to become an offensive player. Like, by the time they get their shot, by the time they learn how to play with away from the ball, by the time they learn, you know, how to be an offensive threat, they're in their third year. You might get a year of offensive power out of them, and then they're gone. Like, and I feel like that's not even a Mick thing. That was a Huggins thing too.
Yeah.
Like, I just never understood that. They recruit the defensively tough guys, and you might win a lot of games by holding people under 60 points, But when you need to get in a track meet with somebody, you're screwed. And UC was always screwed when they had to get in a track meet. You can put up 100 against Abilene Christian, but come conference play when you're playing, you know, UCF, like, that's not going to happen. Like, I don't know. But that's what I'm excited the most about the John Brandon thing. It's just seeing a high-flying offensive powerhouse. And it might take a couple years because they're not really equipped for that right now.
Yeah.
But you never know. I mean, that can change pretty quick with one or two grad transfers or a couple recruits flipping commitment somewhere else. So time will tell. But I don't know. I don't know where else. But anyone else have any hot takes or fun stuff about the UC situation?
Nah.
Other than be awesome if we still had some years on that UCLA UC home and home schedule.
Yeah.
That would have been kind of cool. Mick had to come back here next year. I feel like they probably would have done something to.
They'll sign something here soon where he gets to come back.
Or at least do like a, they go to one of the, they might not do a home and home right away while the wounds are still fresh. They might both go to like the EA Sports, you know, Texas Classic or something like that, where they play, like there's four teams that play. So
I don't feel like the administration at UC has any right to be upset that he left for UCLA.
Yeah, I don't think
because
they
that's a top 10, that's a top 10 college job for basketball. Yeah. I mean, they're in that job comes open hopefully not very often. I get more often recently than in the past, but I mean, that you can't, if you're at UC, which is a top mid-major, you can't pass that UCLA job up for anything.
Nope, I agree. And I forget where he was rumored to go the first time, but Doug McDermott's dad, back when Doug was in college, he was up for, was when Creighton was making their runs. And he was up for, it wasn't the UCLA job, obviously, but it was one of those top tier jobs. Like it was, but he stayed because his kid still had time left there and he wasn't going to take him with him and stuff like that. Because even though he ended up in the NBA, I don't think at the time Doug was really viewed as like, he's a good enough guy to go play at, you know, wherever it was. It wasn't UK, but it was that type of school. Like
Dougie McBuckets?
Yeah. But he's back in, no, that's Jimmer Fredette.
Yeah,
I think
McDermott's still in the league. I want to say he's like, on like the Bulls.
Yeah, but I was thinking of Jimmer was in China and came back.
Yeah, yeah, he finished the season on the Suns.
Yeah, and Doug stayed in the NBA.
Yeah,
but they, I don't know how I got the two confused. I mean, but yeah, it was one of those, like, so rarely do you see someone, and the reason I made that comparison is Creighton at that time is very similar to where I feel like UC is right now, where they're not in a big enough conference to be a, you know, every season they're going to be a top 10 program, but they're good enough where they can rise out of that middle of the pack and be, they can sneak into the top 10 from time to time. I don't even remember. Creighton was in like the Missouri Valley Conference or whatever the hell it was called at the time. So, I mean, it's very, the AAC is probably on par with that type of, they've got two good teams every year and that's three this year, but it's hard to blame Mick, and you just, I don't know.
You can't blame Mick.
No. And I don't think the fan base has really either. There's obviously some of the vocal minority that are pissed off and yelling at him and stuff, but
burning their Mick Cronin jerseys.
I look, and I prefer to act like I'm going to light it on fire and then drop a piece of paper on it that says thank you.
Yep.
Hopefully we're not burning Jackets jerseys here in a couple of nights, but
don't jinx it.
I know. The Blue Jackets, against all odds, have a 3-0 lead against one of the best teams in NHL history in the first round of the playoffs, which, when they went down 3-0 in the first game of the first period of the first game, I was like, this fucking, like, this, I was so, like, deflated and, like, this is, I would have rather not made, I think I even tweeted, like, I'm starting to think it'd be better not to even make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then they rattled off four goals, unanswered goals, and then they held the Lightning scoreless through most of the second game. And
at one point in that first period where they went up 3-0, I switched back to the Reds game. Like, yeah. I was like, I'm done with this. Yeah. I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah. You know, and then I think I have tweet alerts for you guys, and you guys started tweeting that the comeback was on. So I think when it was finally 3-3, I turned it back on. Yeah. But
yeah, I pulled the classic when they got down 3 goals. I throw my hat across the room in frustration, and then it started coming back. So I left it there because I figured it was good luck. But
it hasn't moved.
It's not still there. So I have confirmed that luck did not go away after I picked it up, because they've obviously done well two games after that. Well. So yeah. I'm hoping they can pull off the sweep today, as you listen to this today. But if not, I'm not going to panic. I think if they push it to a game 7 somehow, I'll be panicking. But I think the Jackets can afford to lose one or two and still close this out. So the way they've been playing. But I'd like to see the sweep, just because I proclaimed at the beginning of the playoffs that it's funny how the team that is tied for the most wins in a regular season in NHL history is going to have the least amount of wins in a playoff series with 0. So
there was I was talking with one of our Canadian friends about, like, he was like, oh man, I hate the way that the playoffs are set up, because the playoffs are set up fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's so dumb.
But the he's like, the winner, you know, he's like, Tampa Bay in the next round has to play, like, what is it, the 2 and the 3 or something yeah. dumb like that. And I was like, you mean the Jackets have to play them in the next round, right? Like, yeah. not Tampa. Uh-huh. And he was like, oh yeah, that's right, CBJ has to play them. But yeah, it's like I text him, you know, when the games are going on, and he's like, dude, Tampa can't get anything going. No. They're trying as hard as they can, and it's not working.
You can definitely tell that the Lightning are getting extremely frustrated. I mean, obviously the Kucherov hit is a prime example. Dirty. But yeah, even outside of that, you can see Stamkos is getting fired up, and
he sucker punched Foligno. Like,
another dirty thing.
I thought Foligno was gonna just It was like the Puig situation where he's like, no one was gonna hold him back. I was worried Foligno was gonna. I was worried Foligno was gonna accidentally hit the linesman.
Oh yeah,
and like get a suspension of some sort, but. In that instance, I think the linesman was just trying to save Stamkos' life, because
that look in Foligno's eyes.
Yeah, you know? He took a whack, man. Like, and I, when I was watching it live, I thought, you know, that happens all the time, and it was bullshit that Stamkos hit him the way he did. And I didn't realize until I rewound it to watch it again, or maybe they showed a quick replay of it, that Foligno was actually looking at someone else.
Yeah,
like, he wasn't even like nose to nose with, because sometimes that happens when they're yelling at each other and they just like do their stupid shove fate, like half punch, half shove. But like, he cocked like back and hit him square in the nose when Foligno wasn't even looking at him.
And like, the thing about that too was, like, to be fair, Stamkos had a right to be fired up, I think, because I think it was it Texier, that hit. So Texier, it was one of the younger guys,
I forget who it was now.
He hit Stamkos a little bit late. It was just a shoulder bump, but it was clearly after the whistle. So I get why Stamkos was fired up. But Foligno had nothing to do with this. So I don't know why he chose to hit Foligno, but
he's just frustrated.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. There's been a lot more fights this postseason than in normal postseason play. Yeah. It's been really surprising.
There was maybe 3 or 4 years ago where it was just like all out brawls. It was more than that now, because it was the year that Hartnell was still in Philly, because there was like a bench clearing brawl, but a line brawl between Philly and Pittsburgh the one year. And then Crosby got it. And Crosby was like pulling his hair and stuff back when Hartnell still had the long hair for the Flyers. But so that he was with the Jackets for probably 3 or 4 years. So it's been a long time since then. But there was a year, like Rafi Torres almost killed somebody. I feel like that actually happened a couple years. Yeah. But and there were a lot of fights in those series. But you're right, Dan. Like, the last, like, it's probably been 5 or 6 years, like, the playoffs, it's just been...
It's time to buckle down and play hockey. Like, they're not really worried about trying to turn the tide with a fight. They're more worried about staying on the ice.
And I think that the Jackets have done, and it speaks volumes to Foligno and Tortorella and some of the veteran guys like Dubinsky and other guys that have been around for a while. And it's weird to say Cam, veteran, but guys like Cam too, and Boone Jenner. Like, they're doing a good job of keeping the young guys in check and not getting stupid penalties.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like prior Blue Jackets teams would have bit on some of the stuff that the Lightning are doing. And maybe it's a different series if it's against like Pittsburgh, who they already hate. Because I feel like Pittsburgh was always good at that, of baiting the Jackets into doing something stupid. But you notice, like,
it's a staple of Pittsburgh teams.
It's something about putting on that black and yellow, and that's what they become, no matter the sport. But with someone like Josh Anderson, who during the season is ready to kill somebody at all times, like, there have been times where he's taking chops on the legs with someone's stick, or someone will come up and hit him really late after the whistle, and he either just skates away or just kind of shoves back and, and makes sure that nothing happens. And I thought for sure there was going to be times last night, or, well, two nights ago, as you're listening to this, that the Jackets were going to get baited into stupid penalties. But maybe credit the refs too for not letting it get to that point where just let them, the scrums go, and they don't really, there've been times where I'm like, well, there's going to be some penalties coming out of this. And then they come back from commercial, and like, they're 5-on-5, nobody's in the box. I'm like, I guess I'm going to play. Like, there were gloves off and someone got punched in the face. And they were, who was it? It was
boys will be boys.
Someone got into a scrum and there was gloves were off and they were throwing punches and they each got 2 minutes. Yeah. Might have been Dubinsky in the first game.
I think it was.
Yeah.
I think
it was. But
the one thing I liked seeing was Werenski get his first career NHL fight. That was
what
pretty
a time
funny.
To have.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a playoff legend between taking a puck to the face and coming back.
Yep.
And which of course the Penguins scored on that possession.
I know.
And now it's an NHL rule that got changed. I feel like the Bengals, the Jackets. I guess the Reds haven't really had a reason because rules don't really change much in baseball. But like the Jackets and Bengals have both had playoff series or playoff games lost because of something that happened that wasn't a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, or something, a rule change. And now it's like if someone goes down and is helpless like that, the puck's blown dead.
Yep.
If someone comes at someone's knee, like in the pocket, you know, it's a penalty.
Yep.
It's like, that playoff series with the Penguins a couple years ago completely flipped on that play, and it's Werenski is a playoff legend in Blue Jackets history now, between picking up his first career fight, which he held his own for someone who's never fought before.
Gordie Howe hat trick.
Yeah. That's right.
And he never was really allowed to fight in college. So that might, I don't know if he fought in the AHL, but he made it sound like he's never really actually been in a hockey fight. So what a stage to pick for your first bout.
Oh yeah.
But like you said, the Gordie Howe hat trick in the playoffs, that's a heck of a way to go. But yeah, they're good, and people listening to this, our souls are gonna be crushed in about 12 hours, so as you're listening.
But we're happy right now, so
we're happy now. It'll be fun, and I'm glad that they're actually in this situation. I know I'll think differently if they blow it, but actually enjoying a playoff series instead of being on pins and needles, wondering if they're going to be able to climb back into it, which last year they went up 2-0, and then it never felt like it was their series, though. And then obviously Washington came back and swept the rest of the series. But, I mean, I won't say it, but things don't seem like that's even a possibility the way the Jackets have been playing right now. But
yeah.
So I'm not gonna flat out come out and say it, but it feels good. But I was grinning from ear to ear last night. I'll just say that, like, there's a lot of things that I wanted to say on Twitter, but I did not want to become an old takes exposed. So
what has made you happier? Has it been, you know, the Blue Jackets run right now, or was it the Tiger comeback?
I was posed that question on Twitter, on which I'd rather have a Blue Jackets series win or Tiger winning the Masters on Sunday. And I went with, I said the Blue Jackets because I've never seen it happen.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen Tiger win, and anything, Tiger's career, like Tiger
Woods. Past decade.
Yeah. Like, you'll know. But like, Tiger Woods was the reason I even thought about like wanting to go golfing or even cared to watch golf on TV. And I don't know if I ever would have actually gone golfing if it weren't for someone. At some point I would have, but I would not have started in elementary school. And, but like at this point in his career, anything championship wise or masters or just, you know, majors in general is just icing on the cake of what he's been to watch. Like, he's still fun to watch, even if he's not winning, because he can still pull off some crazy shots and play well. So, like, at this point, it's like, I'd love to see him get Jack, or to actually come close to either tying Jack or breaking Jack's record. But the Jackets, I think, I've invested a hell of a lot more money into Blue Jackets tickets and apparel than I ever did, you know, Tiger Woods shirts or hats or anything.
Sure.
I feel like I live and die, like, when the Jackets lose, or when the Jackets, you know, blow playoff leads and stuff like that, that affects me a hell of a lot more than Tiger not closing out a tournament, not winning the Shell Open or something like that. So it was awesome yesterday. Like, I needed 5 TVs at one point yesterday, because you had the Reds were on, you had the Masters on, you had hockey was on, you had Game of Thrones. You were trying to catch up on the last episode or two of Game of Thrones before the series premiere. It was just mayhem yesterday, but that was a lot of fun.
It was funny. So I wasn't following that closely. I was kind of keeping an eye on who was at the top of the leaderboard, but I hadn't watched any of the first 3 days of the tournament. But on Sunday, I was like, yeah, what the hell, you know, I'll flip it on and see what's going on. So it was like almost 2 o'clock, and I'm like, all right, things should be starting up now. And I flip it up, and we got the final pairing is like 4 holes left. I'm like, what the hell? Like, I didn't realize they bumped it up because of weather. But I watched the end of it. And even as someone, I've never been a big Tiger fan. I wouldn't like actively root against him, but I kind of always felt like rooting for Tiger was like, you know, rooting for the Yankees or rooting for Duke, because I mean, he was just that great. And but even, you know, as someone who I'd say impartial at best with Tiger, like, it was an awesome scene seeing him win that, and especially kind of celebrate with his kids and just that emotion on his face. It was it was a pretty cool moment. So I was glad to see that. I think it was good for golf. And you had mentioned, Mac, that, you know, watching Tiger play kind of is what inspired you to even want to play golf in general. I kind of had that same, like, sense just Sunday, because it's been probably a couple years since I've been golfing. Yeah. But, like, I just watched that, and I'm like, I need to get out and golf more.
Yeah. You put two and two together, you're like, well, Tiger's got a bad back.
Yeah.
I've got a bad back.
Exactly.
I'm going bald. Tiger's going bald.
Yeah, he should have kept his hat on.
I mean, if it makes me a better golfer, I'll start banging Perkins waitresses. I'm not above it.
It can't hurt.
That's right.
Tiger, but
taking half of what I have is a little worse than taking half of what Tiger has. So I don't know. I might have to lay off the waitresses. But I think in Witty, you're talking about the whole rooting for Tiger, rooting for the Yankees. And there was always that Phil versus Tiger thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always kind of a, you know, and I hated Phil, like, early on. I just don't know. I think it was more as my loyalty to Tiger than anything Phil could have ever said or done or did. But now they've become friends.
Yeah.
I feel like the Tiger and Phil fans have kind of united as, like, hey, we're fans of the old guys. Where, like, more Phil fans are liking Tiger and more Tiger fans are liking Phil. And I think the fact that, you know, they're friendlier now, and they've done the whole, whatever, the $9 million challenge thing they did. I don't know. And Phil was obviously, he was rooting for Tiger the whole time, too. And it was kind of funny to see.
Man, looking at Tiger's reception line, like, after he hugged his kids and his mom, like, there were, you know, 10 golfers just waiting there for him that were just competing against him 10 minutes earlier.
Yep.
So happy for him, you know, that he finally had his comeback moment.
And that's what a lot of the guys have said too, is most of those guys that are either our age or a little bit younger, they were Tiger guys growing up. They're like, in what other sport do they get to become professionals and then still, like, compete on the same level? Like, there might be people that are in the NBA now that were huge LeBron fans growing up. But none of those guys started playing basketball because of LeBron. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it was, I mean, it's just a weird dynamic with golf in general, because you can play your whole life. But, it was kind of cool to see a lot of those guys. And it wasn't just the, hey, you're a Nike guy, get out there and shake Tiger's hand. Like, you could tell they were legitimately, like emotional and excited for him and everything. And
like, holy shit, that's Tiger Woods.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Hope he doesn't see my girlfriend. But But and I on the radio today, and this was a stupid hot take, and I don't buy it for a second. But someone said that like Nike made the call for Molinari and Koepka and what's his name, Tony Finau, to start tanking so Tiger could make a charge. I'm like, that no, like, and I don't know if the guy even believed it himself.
Yeah,
but
there's no way you could be so skilled as Molinari to hit those tree branches like that, man.
I felt
bad for him. I was like, that I could sucked. Do that.
That sucked. That Molinari, and that's what I was texting Hibachi about it, because he's really in tune to the golf and just, you know, everything that goes on with all the golfers and about who's who.
He almost went pro.
He did. He could have. Coach would have put him in, but he was like, Molinari is going to become the most hated man in America today for doing nothing other than trying to win a tournament. Like, the guy's not going to do anything to piss. Like, people don't like Sergio because Sergio is a dickhead.
Yeah.
Like, Molinari's a nice guy. He's a good golfer. He's a respectable guy. Like, any other night or any other Sunday, people are like, yeah, go Molinari, keep the charge going. Like, make a run at this thing. People love Koepka because he's the all-American looking dude. He's just a big, he looks like a college football player that decided he was going to pick up golf one day.
Yep.
Tony Finau has the hilarious story of him snapping his leg back into his, when he dislocated his ankle in the par three.
God, man.
So there were so many likable guys in the pack of like with Tiger competing on the final day. And then there was two random dudes came out of nowhere. We hear about it, like, we've all been focused on these two guys this whole round, and then all of a sudden it was like
shot minus six.
There were like two other guys all of a sudden tied for the lead. It's like, where the fuck did these guys come from? And one, I didn't even know the one guy's name. I was like, never even heard of him before. The guy that shot like six under or whatever on the day.
But
like you said, Dan, it was awesome to see everybody getting out there and congratulating him and celebrating with him. And Scott Van Pelt was on there on part of my take today talking about, he was at Augusta. So he was talking about that. And that's where a lot of that stuff came from, where he was like, you know, guys were just happy for him. If nothing else, it wasn't like, hey, we lost this tournament. It was like, hey, and it feels different. It's not like, oh, he lucked into this one as a 43-year-old. It was like, he doesn't drive like 30 yards longer than everyone else on tour anymore.
Yeah.
But still making shots that only Tiger can make, or like,
he's been playing these courses for 20 something years. He's got all the experience.
A lot of the majors that here coming up are at courses where he's won pretty well. So like, there's a chance he can stick another one or two this year if he's still healthy. So,
that's what I was going to ask you. I know we're getting a little ahead of ourselves now, but 2019 Grand Slam for Tiger.
That would tie him
with Jack.
I think he might be pissing into a lot of cups if something like that. But that would be awesome. But no, that would be, I think he's gonna have to string it out to get, he might, if he gets 18, it'll be like in his, on the back half of 40. Like, it's gonna have to be strung out over the next couple, because he's probably the best the most in shape 43-year-old on tour. Like, he's still ripped. Like, he can't do as much stuff because of his back, but he's in such incredible shape for someone who's had that many back surgeries. But that would be funny. But yeah, I don't know. I think we can stop talking about Tiger now, but the one thing that Phil said, or that Tiger said, was about like how he's changed the game of golf. And Tiger was like, hell, even Phil works out now. So, and I think that, I don't think Tiger could have gotten away with saying that back when they weren't friends or anything. So, it is funny that, you know, if you can take a jab at his buddy Phil for actually hitting the weights and running and stuff. But, it was a crazy weekend in sports, and there aren't many weekends like that. I feel like a lot of weekends don't live up to the hype when you hear, you know, we got this weekend, I can't wait. And, you know, games or blowouts or nothing's, I mean, the NBA playoffs, we haven't even touched NBA playoffs. There's a lot of NBA playoff stuff going on, and guys looking at their cell phones and on the bench and all that kind of fun stuff. The Spurs, like, nobody's talked about or paid attention to them at all this year. They're up 1-0 on the Nuggets.
Yep. They're playing. There's a lot of underdogs that won. The Raptors lost to the Magic. Who the hell saw that coming?
Brooklyn won.
Brooklyn beat the Sixers. God, I want the Sixers to lose so bad.
For a team that I've never, I like the Sixers when Iverson was on that team, but like, yeah. I hate the Sixers now. I hate Joel Embiid. Like, I don't like the whole, like, trust the process, and now all of a sudden the process is complete. Like, no, it's not. Until you win a championship, the process is not complete. Like,
yeah. It was a good weekend. I'm looking forward to Blue Jackets tomorrow. I'm looking forward to basketball all week. It's going to be a good week.
Should be a lot of fun, and hopefully
I won't get to see any Reds games because they play too late. their West Coast trips wear me out.
Yeah, we can keep talking to keep it up. Say,
yeah, it's true.
But
I don't know if I want to string South through the rest of that game.
No, I used to love
pretty
West
sure the
Coast.
Fans don't either.
I know we all in college we were all just like,
oh yeah,
bring on the West Coast games because then we can sit up and play video games. We can get our time up our midnight food order.
Yep.
With the end of the game and. And it was great, but now I'm like, I'm just hoping I stay up to, the fifth or sixth inning, and then I just am checking the score in the morning and disappointed that the bullpen blew it. Or,
yeah. See, sometimes now I'm like, I just hope I can make it to first pitch.
Seriously. Yeah. Hell, I even have that problem with 7 o'clock home games sometimes.
That's true. Yep.
Good thing they moved to the 6:40 in April.
they did it for the kids in school or me who can't stay awake. someone that falls asleep in the front yard after they park their car. That might be more of a medical thing. But
yeah. I see it's through most of the weekday 12:30 games too. Just don't tell my boss about that.
Don't worry. Yeah.
Just put my head down, put it on the radio, and
that's right.
Next thing I know, it's time to go home. It's a great way to pass the day.
Yeah. The Reds won.
Oh, it's my pretzel day, man. What time is it? It's 5:30 and more AM or PM. Michael. So I guess you guys have figured out by now, Jefe, Jeff, better known as Jeff, is not with us.
Yeah.
I thought about that when we first started recording. I was like, oh, yeah, like, I'll start out saying, like, Jeff's not with us and everything. And we got right into the Reds talk, and I think I got excited when Puig his home run. And he liked one of my tweets while we've been recording, so he is alive. So, listeners, don't be alarmed.
For now.
For now. He's like, beep, beep, beep. He's like, wait, I just got to like this to Just kidding, Jeff. Love you, buddy.
Yeah. Miss you.
I tolerate you, buddy.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. We love Jeff. He's just had some stuff to take care of tonight. So hopefully if the state of Ohio lets him record next week, we'll have
him. Yeah.
So the next 6 weeks, we're going to be coming to you on Tuesdays?
It's planned.
This is one, and then unless it, the rumors are true about possibly a surprise episode at the end, there's rumors that maybe HBO recorded an extra episode and they're going to surprise. I don't know. Like, you can't really surprise release it, and like everyone just accidentally turns to HBO. But there've been kind of rumors that maybe after the sixth episode, they're like, "Hey, gotcha. There's still another episode," type of thing.
Wow. Because all you month-to-month HBO Now subscribers have to pay for another month.
Hilarious if it was one of those deals, like, sign up now, you get the first 6 weeks free.
Yeah.
And then you have to subscribe for a year after that. Thank you everybody for understanding. I've been a big Game of Thrones fan, and I know Witty watches it as well, but I don't have the self-restraint or the self-discipline to not find out spoilers just because I have to be on my phone 24/7, and I would have found out so much. Then luckily
I have to go see Avengers the first weekend or else I'm just going to read all about it. Right.
And if we have to readjust recording time for it, I'm sorry. You're just not going to be on the show, buddy.
That's fine. I don't really add much anyways.
This is a one-way relationship here where I call the shots and make everybody bend over backwards for my hour of television on Sunday.
We're an accommodating bunch here.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So we'll be
Jefe.
He didn't ask. If he asked, we might have been able to figure something out, but
no, fuck him.
I'm like, sorry, Jeff. If you get a 9 o'clock court date, then I mean,
yeah.
What are we supposed to do about that?
That's right.
Like, if the Ohio Supreme Court's only going to hear a case at 9 o'clock on Monday night, then
listen, we'll record with you once you get extradited back to Ohio.
Yeah. But until then, enjoy Utah.
Yeah.
Well, you should have thought about it before you left. That's all I'm gonna
say. That's right.
Just because you've seen Book of Mormon does not mean it.
Polygamy is legal. Homosexuality is not.
These are my house brothers. My brother. Whatever. The gay Mormon thing. I don't know. How would that be? These are my brother husbands. There you go. I watch Big Love. Isn't that the show that's on HBO?
Maybe.
I watch Queer as F.
That's one of the best Michael Scott beefs ever.
Yeah.
That and I drove my car into it. Beep. All right. Well, you guys, thanks for hanging on. If you did. Yeah. Check us
this
out.
This has been fun.
Yeah.
That's what happens when we got a lot of positivity in our sports teams.
Yeah.
We have some energy.
We'll see. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see next week when the Jackets are
on
the red 7 straight and we can't get Jeff back from Utah. It'll be... We'll see how next week is. But yeah. God willing, we'll have some more fun sports to talk about.
That's right.
Hopefully not lose any more coaches. We'll be there. So, I don't know. Enjoy your week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And be sure to subscribe. And the people that listen have already rated and reviewed it. So, I can't really say that. So, yeah. Create burner accounts, rate and review.
Yeah. That's all. Ask. Yeah, come on. It's not that hard.
We'll see you next week.
5 cents a day. You can sponsor... this starving podcast. See you guys.
See ya.